CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Baku is the sparkling capital of Azerbaijan. Baku also is the capital of a country, Azerbaijan, that shares a border with Iran. Indeed, the people of Azerbaijan are greatly outnumbered by the Azerbaijanis who live in Iran and are extremely disposed towards the prosperity and freedom that people in Azerbaijan agree to as compared to the Islamic Republic of Iran's dictatorship over the Azerbaijani of Iran. This is a rough neighborhood. However, most recently, the president of Israel, Mr. Herzog, is visiting in Baku. At the same time, Iran is making new threats. How so, Malcolm?
So this is, it is very interesting and a very important ally of the United States and of Israel. Azerbaijan hosted the president of Israel in a widely publicized visit, something that's been worked on for some time. And as you know, Azerbaijan opened an embassy in Israel just a few months ago. And the first ambassador arrived, and I was actually the first person he met with in Israel after his arrival, a very fine and appropriate diplomat for this sensitive job. And the president, Aliyev, in Baku with President Herzog, talked about the entire global and regional structure. And because Israel and Azerbaijan face many common enemies, mostly the challenges from Iran, and I think that this is President Aliyev made some really interesting comments about the common values, national interests, territorial integrity, and the security relationships that have been stepped up. And remembering, Azerbaijan is on Iran's northern border, Israel buys 30% of its oil from Baku. And of course, you have the huge Azeri ethnic population in Iran. So we had this, but concomitant with this came out some reports of secret documents that were obtained by opposition forces in Iran. And it shows how much the Iranians are concerned about Iran, about Azerbaijan and its relationship with Israel. We know that tensions have been high since November of 22, and each side accused the other of terrorism and espionage. And in early May, they expelled each other's diplomats, if you remember, and accusing them again of terrorist attacks. And the buildup on the border of Azerbaijan of Iranian forces, which backed it down. And, you know, Iran is very afraid of any kind of separatist movements, which Azerbaijan could instigate against amongst the Azeri population. But here, these documents show that Baku is considered a serious threat, that what they're doing, and especially their relationship with Turkey and Israel, is seen by Iran as challenging, and talking about how Israel could be the beneficiary of it. It even goes into the MEK claims that by foreign intelligence and security departments and the ministry against them. It was a very confidential document, and I'm sure we will get more information and get back to it in the future. But it ties in then, of course, to this visit.
Malcolm, we go to the WHO, which has been a controversy for years here because of the way the COVID crisis was handled. But now the WHO is targeting Israel. For why?
Again, the one country that responded whenever there was an earthquake, a tragedy, anywhere else, field hospitals in Ukraine and Haiti, is the only country in that the WHO, World Health Organization, has decided to single out for allegedly violating human rights, the health rights of Palestinians, when we know how in Syria, in all the countries in Iran, the terrible treatment that people have been subjected to, but minorities have been subjected to, quite the opposite in terms of Israel. But a vote of 76 to 13 with 35 abstentions, they adopted a resolution which Syria and Palestinian delegations submitted, requiring the WHO to hold another meeting a year from now on the same subject. But no other country receives this kind of treatment at the WHO. In Syria, where hospitals and other health medical infrastructure are deliberately bombed by Syrian and Russian forces. Nothing about Afghanistan, where the Taliban takeover has led to a collapse of it, only in regard to Israel. And it shows, again, the bias at the UN and a model country in terms of assistance. 3,000 children, Palestinian children, have been treated for heart ailments for free in Israel. Palestinians come from Gaza and elsewhere for treatment, and yet they're subjected to this kind of bias and horrendous accusations.
The U.S. State Department, you tell me they now acknowledge pay to slay, something that's been in place for decades, certainly. However, what are they going to do about it, Malcolm? Pay to slay at the same time that the U.S. is vouchsafing funding of the Palestinian Authority?
So we had the testimony by the Assistant Secretary of State, Barbara Leaf, who was ambassador in the UAE, and she confirmed, after heavy questioning, especially from Senator Cruz, that the PA, Palestinian Authority, continues to make so-called pay-to-slay stipends. Maybe $300 million of their money goes to pay those who engage in terrorism. A recent murderer was paid, and it's estimated in the time that he'll be in prison, over $2 million. It's much more than Palestinian workers get. And according to all the estimates, the average Palestinian wage doesn't come close to what they pay terrorists. And the more they kill, the more they get. And this is something that's been condemned. She, in very strong terms, condemned it. But they said that that the administration sent to Congress a report that officially certified that the Palestinian Authority, PLO, are a terrorist organization, that they haven't met the legal requirement for terminating the payments for acts of terrorism against Israeli and U.S. citizens. So they're saying this is a contradiction when we see it. She said we abhor these payments, but we don't believe that the money doesn't go to the PA or PLO. It goes for specific projects and stuff. But many members of Congress feel that this is fungible money. And, you know, the time has come when we really can't just keep excusing this practice. When Abbas said, and flies in the face of every U.S. demand about ending pay to slay, and the Taylor Force Act passed by the United States mandates it, and yet they continue this horrendous thing, which I don't know any other country that offers its citizens these bonuses and benefits to them or their families if they engage in such terrorist acts.
We have a little more than a minute. What is the legend of Tantura, 1948?
Yeah, it's another one of the myths that has been used against Israel, but it goes back many years when somebody was doing a doctoral thesis claimed to have tapes saying, admitting from admissions from Israeli forces that they had engaged in a massacre at Tantura, which is a Palestinian village near Haifa. And they're talking about the War of Independence in 1948. As it turned out, when they listened to the tapes, it doesn't say it. And the author then recanted and said he had no evidence of it. But there was a memo of the Arab High Committee, which was submitted to the UN in 48 and makes no mention of Tantura. We know that
Malcolm,
the six volumes on al-Nakba makes no mention of it, yet it's used as an accusation against Israel.
So Tantura is a lie, is a falsehood. And when anybody reads it or hears about it, they should know that they're dealing with agitprop. Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Tantura. Spell it, Malcolm, Tantura.
T-A-N-T-U-R-A. Can look it up. But even guys who wrote books about it in 1998 and else, and who lived there, never mentioned the massacre.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.